It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Billions of nocturnal migratory birds navigate North America. According to a study published in the journal Nature Communications, they must contend with the rapid growth of the artificial glow of the night sky. Thanks to Deb and Wassa for suggesting we talk more about this. Deb notices more light at night in her community.
Not just residential, but commercial. And I see it on our waterways and how it affects birds and other things. You can't see the stars at night.
You can join the conversation. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Kyle Horton is an assistant professor at Colorado State University in the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Conservation Biology and lead author of the study on artificial light and bird migration. Kyle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate, for having me, and good morning.
Good morning. So you and your colleagues mapped for the first time all the stopover sites in the U.S. for migratory birds. Can you first of all explain what qualifies as a stopover site, what that means?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the vast majority of migratory birds through North America will be migrating at night. So as these birds initiate that nocturnal flight, they'll lift off into the atmosphere. And we can use radars to quantify those really intense locations of where birds are picking off of our landscape. And we would consider those consistently high density areas as a migratory hotspot for stopover.
And what does this map look like? How did you put this together?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the map itself looks like sort of a hodgepodge of colors. So we delineate hotspots in reds on our maps and areas that also get a lot of activity but aren't quite a hotspot in yellows and more sort of other areas that are less active in grays. And these hotspots are sprinkled across the United States. And the tool that we're actually using to map these hotspots is using radar data. So the same radars that you would turn on the Weather Channel to look at a thunderstorm rolling through or other severe weather or snowfall are the same radars that we can also quantify the movement of migratory birds. The radars themselves are designed for detecting water or precipitation in the atmosphere. And from a radar perspective, those birds also look like very large rain droplets. So we're able to delineate rain versus birds and then do ecology off of that.
Oh, that's really exciting to use radar in that capacity in a whole new way.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. I think it's, you know, we've been using radar for a long time to study migratory birds, all the way dating back to World War II. But that technology has advanced sufficiently, and in the last, you know, 5 or so years, we've really been able to access this treasure trove of radar data to do ornithology, really.
Your study concludes that artificial light is a leading cause of death for birds during nighttime migration. Why are these nocturnally migrating birds attracted to artificial light?
Yeah, that's a challenging question in a way, right? We know, in the last, you know, probably 100, 200 years, there's been many reports that birds, migratory birds, are attracted to lights at night. You know, originally maybe fires at night, to when we see sort of lights on buildings. We see birds flying towards communication towers. So we know that the birds are attracted to light. The actual mechanism is sort of challenging for us to unravel. We have some thoughts that it relates to their navigation. And might date back deep into their evolution. Lights on a landscape are somewhat of an unnatural thing in the history of birds. The most natural light source would have been probably stars or the moon. And now we have lights sprinkled across the landscape globally. And it looks like birds are probably cueing in on some of these lights in part for their navigation. And it's causing a false cue for them to hone in on.
In this false cue, I understand that birds can circle a light and go around it and around it and around it in circles until exhaustion. What is happening there?
Yeah, so this is sometimes the unfortunate part of these lights. So if they're not extinguished, if they're too bright on the landscape, like you mentioned, the birds they'll be attracted at long distances to the light source. They'll circle, they'll call. Sometimes they'll circle and call until they get low enough to the ground. That's where some of the most challenging issues will occur, where they could collide with communication towers. It could be buildings that have a lot of glass on them, or they just get exhausted, right? And they're going to land and have to spend, their day or days in areas that are somewhat suboptimal, right? A migratory bird landing in a downtown urban center might be challenging for that bird to then again regain its energy stores to feed, to forage, to continue that migration. And those are some of the carryover effects we expect from light pollution.
We're talking about the effects of light pollution on migratory birds. Kyle Horton is an assistant professor at Colorado State University. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Kyle, your study determined that light pollution attracts songbirds more than agricultural lands, precipitation, and temperature. What about the impacts of climate change on bird behavior?
Yeah, that's a great question. Something we think a lot about is how different weather patterns might be changing migration on seasonal or annual basis, and then thinking across longer time series about climate change. And what we have dug into in some of these studies is that we actually see some of the timing of migration is changing under climate change, especially in the spring. In some of these warmer seasons, we're seeing that the birds are showing up earlier. It doesn't appear that they're showing up earlier enough to match the changing seasons, but migration patterns certainly are changing. And again, we see that whether it's from studies like this or anecdotal observations from bird watchers or folks seeing different birds showing up at their bird feeders at different times of the year.
So, light pollution can also confuse birds, as you've been talking about. How is this affecting the ability of birds to reach nesting and foraging grounds?
Yeah, so on the in the most grave example, right, is that the birds are going to potentially collide with something that ultimately kills the bird, right? So right there, the migration is halted for that bird. We also think about some of the more diffuse issues of light pollution. As we mentioned, right, the birds circle, they call, they burn up unnecessary energy because they're attracted to lights, and that might carry over to the breeding grounds or potentially the wintering grounds as well. So now this bird has to make up time, it has to make up foraging efforts to get to the breeding grounds to raise young. It's really competitive often on the breeding grounds for these birds. So showing up days late, a week late, can really have important consequences for the success of that bird to raise a nest of younglings that will, start their own migration. So there's a number of carryover effects that we expect from light pollution. Measuring it is quite challenging, but studies like this start to point to those issues and the scale of the issue.
Looking for solutions here, Deb in Wausau is wondering if motion sensors could help, only, turning on a light when it's triggered.
Yeah, that's a great point and a great suggestion. That's certainly something that we advocate for. Reducing lights where and when we can, when we feel safe in doing so, is really important. Having motion sensors on exterior lights becomes really important and is a good messaging strategy to just have the lights on when we need and want it. Other things that we try to message is, do we need the light to be as bright as it is? So if we need the light, can we dim the light and still get the same use? And then we often talk about the color of the light as well, right? We're probably all quite familiar, maybe as we're driving into work with, seeing headlights on cars with that really bright white to blue light. That tends to be somewhat worse for most animals. So if we can get more towards some of those warmer colored lights, the yellows to oranges, that seems to also reduce some of the negative effects that we get from light pollution, in ecology.
And John from Milwaukee is asking just that, whether it does make any difference, the color of the light. And John's heard that red might be less harmful than other colors to birds.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we see this a lot in collisions at communication towers as well, with birds potentially colliding with those towers. Studies have shown that a blinking red light on those communication towers can reduce collisions. So we sort of move that forward and think, okay, red lights probably have the least impact of on attraction, at least for migratory birds. And that seems to hold true for many other taxa as well. So red light, getting more towards those warmer color lights to red, will be beneficial.
Kyle Horton is a conservation biologist at Colorado State University, an aspect of his research focusing on how artificial lights can affect migratory bird patterns. Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the growing effects of light pollution on migratory birds. And in recent days, a United Nations wildlife meeting is offering new global guidelines to address the impacts of light pollution on migratory species. Call in with a question. You can share your comments, 800-642-1234. Kyle Horton is an assistant professor at Colorado State University researching avian flight strategies and artificial light. Let's go to Crash in Milwaukee. Hi, Crash. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. Thanks for this discussion. Fascinating subject. I'm curious, do other wavelengths of light, would they be helpful, like infrared or ultraviolet, or would they actually do more harm?
Yeah, that's a great point. So it's certainly an area, I think, of research that we're interested in. Whether or not infrared or ultraviolet would be beneficial, I think, is actually an open question. So I think that's in part what, you know, we will be looking at going into the future. We're actually running current studies of trying to figure out what causes the most or least attractive just based on wavelength. So we haven't jumped into ultraviolet or infrared, but we're looking at sort of within red, blue, white, and yellow lights and seeing what the attraction looks like. So, you know, stay tuned for future updates on that, but that's a great thing that we're often thinking about. Great question.
Developing research area. I want to turn to the Chicago mass die-off tragedy last October, about 1,000 birds being killed by colliding with McCormick Place, Lakeside Center in Chicago. How unusual was that incident?
Yeah, so, you know, last fall we had around 1,000 birds collide in a single morning with the windows of McCormick Place Convention Center. That event is the one of the largest, if not the largest, collision events in the last 40 years.
Wow.
So it's certainly atypical in that sense, but each season, you know, there's events in the mornings where we're getting, you know, low hundreds of dead birds. So we do see some of these big mortality events at that building and other buildings around the US and globally as well. So it's uncommon in the sense of the magnitude, but common in that we do have many collision events per season.
Have there been any prevention efforts that have resulted from these mass die-offs of birds like this one in Chicago?
Yeah, so it's a little unfortunate sometimes that, you know, the action that we see moving forward is often spurred on by, you know, a collision event like this. But, you know, some of the positive outcomes of this, you know, if you could think of it in that context, is that the convention center has agreed to do some mitigation, turning off some of their lights when they're not necessary, closing the blinds when necessary. We know that there's a strong relationship between when the lights are on in that convention center and how many birds we see dying at the windows. So we can really reduce mortality, you know, sometimes halving, if not creating more dramatic reductions in bird collisions, just by turning off the switch and reducing those lights. So there have been some measures and agreements to reduce light pollution on that building, and we know that that will translate into fewer bird collisions.
Your research is supported by NASA. Why is the U.S. space program interested in the threats facing migratory birds?
Yeah, that's a good point to raise. So NASA does many things, right? And we know them for lots of reasons, but we probably often don't think about them, for interest in studying migratory birds. But the relationship here is that we can use data sets that NASA generates at very large scales, things like land cover or the temperatures on Earth's surface. And we know that there's an integral relationship, a strong relationship between where birds are on the landscape and what the land cover looks like, whether it's forested or agriculture. So we can use these vast data sets that NASA generates from their space-based satellites, and we can link it with observations of migratory birds. So that's been a really exciting thing, and that's what's allowed us to map bird migration stopover at such large scales from, as we say, coast to coast, border to border across the lower 48 states. We can map where and when birds will be flying on a given night or a given season.
And on a given night, then, it can also be communicated in the weather forecast. I noticed in your presentation, you said there are some stations that if it is a particularly acute migratory time, it will be part of their weather forecast. Can you talk about that?
We run a project called BirdCast. You can see live migration movements and forecasts at birdcast.info. We make forecasts during spring and fall. They go live on March 1st and go through the mid-June, start back up in August for fall migration. And we make forecasts of where we expect some birds to be migrating. Just like you would tune on, a weather forecast to see what the temperature is, you can pull up BirdCast and see what the bird migration forecast will be. How many birds will be flying over Milwaukee or Chicago or whatever your city of interest is, you can see how many birds we expect to be flying, what we think the makeup of those birds will be, what species will be flying throughout that season. So there's just a tremendous amount of information that we now have at our disposal to talk about migratory birds. And we can also use those forecasts to try to say, okay, this is one of the big nights of migration coming up. If we could reduce light pollution on this night, this would have a really positive benefit for the success of all the migratory birds that sort of we know and love and want to see, get to their breeding grounds.
And that's at BirdCast. Kyle Horton, assistant professor at Colorado State University, as we talk about the effects of light pollution on migratory birds. You can join with your question at 800-642-1234. Kyle, in recent days, the United Nations released its first ever State of the World's Migratory Species report, and the report identifies light pollution as a growing threat to many migratory species. How much research has been done on the effects of night pollution on other wildlife, outside of birds?
Yeah, so this is certainly a growing field. Birds is just one element. So when we try to talk about light pollution, we're advocating for the reduction of light pollution for all wildlife. So whether this is movements of deer on the landscape or bats on the landscape, or where I'm out west, mountain lions and their movements is all influenced by light pollution. A tremendous amount of interest in invertebrates or insects and how they're attracted and could be causing population declines for some species that they're strongly attracted to light pollution. So it's a pretty widespread phenomena. And we also just, in alignment with recommendations there, right? Light pollution is one of these things that if we change it tonight, we'd have a positive impact tomorrow. And that's not true of most ecological concerns. So we can have really positive benefits by reducing light pollution immediately.
Do you find that it's a positive step for the United Nations to move in this direction to acknowledge light pollution? And, what are the repercussions maybe globally about light pollution?
I think it is the right step. I think awareness is a big part of it. We've grown accustomed to lights at night. It is certainly a resource that we have. And we need to frame it in the sense of what are some of the negative consequences. I often say, if I take a can of paint and I walk to my local stream and I dump it in there, it's very clear that's pollution. But if I leave my porch light on all night or a skyscraper leaves really bright lights, we don't often view that as that same form of pollution. But for some organisms, it is affecting them in a negative way. So we want to just reframe how we think about lights to some extent.
Kyle, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Kyle Horton is an assistant professor at Colorado State University in the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Conservation. And we continue the discussion with the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The glow from city centers is a magnet for migratory birds. We learn about artificial light at night and other hazards that migrating birds encounter in Wisconsin. Call in with a question. You can add your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Karen Etterhale is chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership and former executive secretary of the Madison Audubon Society, now known as the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. Karen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Scientists are finding that North America has lost, 3 billion birds in recent years. What has been the response among Wisconsin birders to this decline in bird populations?
Well, this is really a serious issue, and a lot of us who have birded a long time have noticed in many cases that our birds are a lot fewer, including a lot of our songbirds, but across the board, that's true. March of last year, we held a statewide conference to address the issue and tried to inspire people to do more for birds, to bring birds back, which was the theme of our conference.
What were some of the ideas that came up to bring birds back?
There's a lot of problems that we can address. The biggest one is habitat, and that was addressed by your previous speaker, looking at stopover sites. But it's across the board. So one thing that people can do is to start planting or replacing their plantings with native species. Those support all the insects that most birds feed to their young in almost all cases. And the plants that are not native have not evolved with the insects that they need here in Wisconsin. So that's one of the biggest ones is habitat.
Habitat, yes. On. Yes.
We didn't want to look at all the different hazards to birds in Wisconsin because that would be a little bit overwhelming, and we can just mention some of those here this morning. But the other two we wanted to focus on were windows, which also relates to your previous speaker. Almost everyone has a window at their home that has caused deaths to birds. So we really tried to promote addressing just at least one of your windows. We had sample kits that you could put on your windows. We've provided information about all the ways you could address one, and maybe you need to address more than one. But if all the people that attend this and want to do this, we will be saving a lot of birds.
What can someone do to their picture window that looks out to a tree? How would you change the window?
The picture windows are a little harder because they're so big, mm-hmm. but you can address those too. The most important thing is to try to put the treatment on the outside of your window. What happens is the birds, you have to think like a bird, right? So what the bird sees is not the glass, it's the reflection, and it looks like habitat. Mm-hmm. Or they don't see the glass at all and they run into it. So you want to break up that reflection. One of the treatments is called feather-friendly bird collision deterrent, and it's little dots, and you put it on your window, and then it's just these small dots. They have to be placed every 2 inches in both directions to be most effective, and that has really reduced the collisions at people's homes. We were recently had a booth at the Garden Expo in Madison, and people were telling us they did this and it actually worked.
Can you see the dots? What do they look like?
You have to, they're like little see-through pieces.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So you can see them if you look at the glass, but they're not a deterrent to looking through your picture window or your window. And you get used to those fairly quickly. So it's not much of a problem. There's also strands of strings that you can put on the outside of your window. These are all on a website, which I can give you when it's
sure.
appropriate.
You partnered with Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership did, launching the SOS, Save Our Songbirds initiative. What is that effort meant to accomplish?
Well, that was developed in conjunction with our meeting last year, and that's where the kickoff was. So SOS, Save Our Songbirds, does exactly what I'm explaining right now, is focusing on three things that you as a homeowner or even an apartment dweller can do to help birds. One is to provide some habitat by planting a native species, a shrub, even a pot of flowers for hummingbirds, addressing one of your windows, and then trying to find bird-friendly coffee to drink, which is really important because a lot of our birds travel to South and Central America, and a lot of the coffee farmers now are raising the rainforest and then planting single species coffee trees, which is not very helpful for most of our songbirds that go down to those countries. If you try to buy a bird-friendly coffee like Birds and Beans, which you can order online, there's some other ones, or even organic coffee. A lot of that is grown under the rainforest canopy, which is beneficial to our migrating birds. So those are the three things. And you can go online, SOS Save Our Songbirds, and all of this information is right there. And you can sign up for a newsletter, too, for free.
Karen Etter-Hale is with us, chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership, as we talk about threats to songbirds in Wisconsin and what we can do about it. You can join in. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Tuli emailed and asked, Karen, what is the single most impactful thing that the average Wisconsinite can do to support birds in our state?
Again, I think it's the habitat. And even if you plant just a corner of your yard in native species, or plant a shrub, or if you want to redo your whole yard, there are numerous native landscaping and companies and nurseries in Wisconsin. Those are all, you can find those through Save Our Songbirds website or go to the DNR. And there's a whole list of them, and they're very, very helpful. I would say also talk to your local master gardener or master naturalist. There's hundreds of them all through the state, and they will also have really good information for you to get started on that. Not everybody can plant things. So, like I say, try to address your window.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your cats indoors, please. It's better for the cats and the birds. Check to see that you maybe are a bird city. There's nearly 100 communities in Wisconsin that are bird cities. It's any kind of community, and help on their efforts.
You serve on the steering committee.
Pesticides.
Yeah. I was just going to jump in and say you serve on the steering committee of Bird City, Wisconsin. What do Bird City, Wisconsin communities do to make themselves friendlier to birds?
Bird City, Wisconsin got started to certify communities, any size, even a county or a town, to meet certain criteria to be bird friendly. So they work on habitat and education and hazards to birds. And each of them has a committee that works to increase those efforts and make their community better for birds, which is better for people too. So it's a whole range of things. There's a lot of different criteria that you can meet. And, you know, smaller communities might do one thing and a large community do another.
Let's bring in Bill in Iron River. Hi, Bill. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. Yeah, I've got a patio door. Well, it's actually a three panel, and it goes out to a deck. And in the past, I'd had birds hanging around, and they'd run into the windows. I got one of these model owls, and I put it up on the deck rail. It's got this head that bobs in the wind. There haven't been any birds that hit that window since I put that up.
Interesting. Bill, thank you. How about an owl, fake owl, Karen?
It might be just that there's something near your window that the bird isn't seeing quite so much glass. But I know a lot of cases where people have put up an owl and the birds get used to it pretty soon. They even maybe perch on it. So don't think that unless it's moving, you have one that moves a lot. I don't think it's a really good deterrent. But in some cases, maybe it would work. It's hard to deter birds from hitting windows or attacking windows, which is a different issue.
Karen Etter-Hale chairs the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership as we learn ways to protect migrating birds. Call in with a question. You can share comments at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about how Wisconsin conservation groups have partnered to help save birds and raise awareness about the hazards that migrating birds encounter. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Karen Etter-Hale with us with the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership. Karen, a former director of Bird City, Wisconsin, Brian Lenz, convinced the builders of the Bucks Arena, Pfizer Forum, to include bird-friendly design features. That was back in 2018. How receptive are large developers to include features that reduce bird collisions?
It's and it really important that a lot of these large buildings with a lot of glass try to address the problem. It's been more successful as we go on with a lot of the architects having been trained in or taken conferences on how to do this. There's also been a lot of development of bird-friendly glass where it's actually in the glass, so it costs a lot less than trying to address the problem afterwards.
Trying to wrap the building.
More and more, there's more and more architects and builders who are doing this, and we're trying to get some legislation passed also where new buildings or retrofit buildings will install that glass.
You mentioned that at times birds attack windows. What happens in these circumstances?
That happens often with songbirds during the nesting period. Their hormones are on, and they think they see another arrival in the glass. And especially cardinals, blue jays, robins, and others will start attacking the glass. And that's really hard to address. Mm. But you almost have to cover the entire outside of the window too, or your car rearview mirrors sometimes. So that's kind of a different question than what we're trying to do here, but it's a common problem.
Well, let's bring in Terry in Green Bay now. Terry, hi.
Hi there. Good morning to you. I wanted to go back to where she was talking about those dots. What we were able to get, is this pattern of like leaves. They almost look like a maple leaf. And we were able to pick those up at our local county park or state park right in the office. And we have seen, I mean, we didn't really have a lot of that happening to us, but we've seen that that has definitely been a benefit. And she's right. You can see right through them. It just looks like a pretty decoration on the window.
Ah, okay.
So I'm really glad we found those.
And that was picked up at a park location, you said?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was a state park or a county park or, mm-hmm. you know, a national park, but it was in Wisconsin.
Okay.
We picked it up, and it was right in, you know, like the gift center where they have postcards and T-shirts and all that other stuff. It was on the counter because it really was only like an 8x10 envelope or sleeve that they had them in, and it worked out really great.
Terry, thank you for that tip. Karen, what can you tell us there?
Yeah, those also work, and they're, like she said, decorative. You can get them at, I think, at Wild Birds, too, and some of the other outdoor stores, or order them. You have to put them on the outside of the glass, not the inside, and they have to be fairly close together to actually stop the birds from hitting all together, but they do help. The other thing that can help is using the washable markers or chalk on the outside of your windows, and that's, like, temporary. You can have your kids or grandkids or neighbor kids do some temporary artwork on your windows and then you can wash it off. So that would be a cheaper way perhaps to address your windows.
I have some takers for that. I wonder about the Lights Out program. You know, the Audubon Society established Lights Out decades ago in Chicago to reduce the threat of artificial lights in urban areas. How have Lights Out efforts caught on?
They're really taking off across the country, and there's quite a few in Wisconsin as well. It actually got started in Toronto, Canada, long before it reached Chicago. But you can go online and see the big difference between when the lights are on and when they're off. And they don't have to be off all year. It can be just during the major migration periods of spring and fall. But it also saves a lot of money for those buildings to not have those lights on. So it's a benefit, and it helps us to see the night skies too. So it's beneficial for birds and for people as well.
There are other threats to nocturnally migrating birds. What can you tell us about, like, water and air pollution, noise?
I'm not as familiar about noise, but mm-hmm. certainly the light pollution, and then just the building, the loss of habitat along, like for instance, Lake Michigan. Because when the birds are migrating at night, they're coming up from the south, if it's spring, and when it becomes light in the morning, they see themselves over water, over Lake Michigan. And so they head to the lake shore immediately, and they've been flying all night, so they need energy, and they come down and look for food. So having habitat right along the lake shore and native species that provide that the energy is really important. But that's true across the board, but it often concentrates birds along the Lake Michigan lakeshore, for instance, because they're out over water sometimes when they're migrating. You can see this on radar. It's really quite interesting.
I'm sure, too, the birdcast and the technology has really brought significant accuracy and attention to when migration happens. Has that helped?
Oh, it's helped a lot. And it's really interesting because if people are watching this radar the night before, they can see that, or you can just look at the weather. If the winds are out of the south in the spring, and you know that there's probably going to be birds coming up, and you can even take off work that day. Maybe you'd go watching birds instead.
Oh, I love it. Karen Etter-Hale, chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership, as we talk about threats to songbirds, preservation efforts. You can call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Karen, it begs the question, where do you love to go birding and why?
Oh, I bird everywhere, but of course you can just bird outside your window. If I might make one more comment, this tomorrow and Saturday is at Prairie du Chien. It's Bald Eagle Appreciation Days, and there will be a booth there with samples of coffee and feather-friendly bird kits.
Awesome. That's so great. So what are some of the things you do when you go out birding? I would imagine you have binoculars, but, you know, walk us through what you do when you go birding.
I have the eBird application on my phone, and I turn it on as soon as I'm out the door. That tracks my distance and you know, how long I've been birding. And you can put the birds right in there, or you can do it later. It adds to the eBird Cornell Lab database, which helps birds too, because you're putting your local birds in there. And then I just enjoy walking or biking or maybe going farther afield or traveling out of state, and I just bird everywhere I am. And it all those records add up to helping researchers look at bird numbers and distributions and everything else across the world. So it's just a lot of fun. It keeps track of your records. Also, so it's a personal list of the birds, where you've been, how long you've birded. It's fascinating. It's just a fascination to do that. And all you need is some a program that identifies the birds or a bird book, and
You can contribute. And you can contribute to the citizen science. In our last moments together, Greg in Reedsburg is wanting to know about invasive bird species and their effects on the bird population.
The main ones we have in Wisconsin are the house sparrow, the starling, and the pigeon. And starlings and house sparrows often take over nesting native species. They'll even kill them. So you want to try to keep those out of your bird houses, or you take down your old martin house that isn't attracting martins anyway. There's a lot of those non-native species, and it's pretty hard to deal with them. They're here permanently. They've been here for a long, long time. So we just have to deal with those. But if you're trying to get bluebirds to nest, try to keep the house sparrows out of those. Keep throwing them out.
Evicting the house sparrows. Karen, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Karen Etter-Hale is chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Partnership. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.